This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. A much-anticipated alternative for addiction recovery is now a reality in southern West Virginia. The Four Seasons Recovery Center in Mercer County is part of the West Virginia Justice Reinvestment Act. Jessica Lilly was there yesterday for the ribbon-cutting celebration.
State, federal, and local representatives, as well as participants, packed the dining hall of the newly renovated school to celebrate the new option for addiction treatment in the region.
Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest.
The ceremony opened with a prayer, followed by several speakers, including Mercer County Circuit Court Judge Omar Abouhassan. He says he's glad there's an alternative to incarceration.
But there are other cases in which the safety of the community is not an issue. It's the individual needs that are the issue. And those appropriate cases, this is going to give us a local option here to do that.
Patients are referred to the non-medical detox facility and qualify for the Four Seasons program after a referral from the court system. The facility is run by recovering addicts themselves and utilizes a 12-step program. The crowd got a glimpse of what that program looks like as the center's leaders were introduced.
I'm Catherine. I'm a recovering addict.
Hey, my name is Justin Clark, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hey, Justin.
My name is Jason Smith.
Four Seasons director Terry Danielson is also a recovering addict and has been clean since November 2011. Danielson says the ceremony is nice and he appreciates the community's recognition, but he knows his work to help people in the region is just beginning.
This is a repetitive process over and over again that we go through on a daily basis, and to see the guys who have been courageous enough to stick and stay for over a month now and continue to learn and grow, I mean, that's really what it's all about.
Right now, the facility in Bluefield can house 20 men. The state plans to double the amount of beds in the second year and provide space for 60 men in year three. Danielson is also tasked with raising funds to remain open after the money from the state runs out. The Justice Reinvestment Act covers the next 3 years. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jessica Lilly in Bluefield.
We first heard Terry Danielson's story of addiction as part of our heroin series, The Needle and the Damage Done. You can find more about the Four Seasons Recovery Center and the series on our website, wvpublic.org. The National Governors Association summer meeting gets underway today at the Greenbrier in White Sulphur Springs. Governor Tomlin will welcome the nation's chief executives and their families to West Virginia during events that last through Saturday. Tomlin will introduce the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Sylvia Matthews Burwell, a native of Hinton in Summers County, to his colleagues. The governor is also interested in speaking with U.S. Labor Secretary Tom Perez about his concern over layoffs in the coal industry and federal training and retraining programs for former miners. Holding the National Governors meeting here took more than a simple invitation. I sat down with the governor in his office at the state capitol.
You know, after I became governor, I looked and I thought, you know, we haven't hosted the NGA since 1950, 65 years ago. So we started the process. You got to put together a whole presentation. So, you know, a lot of very specific things that the NGA looks for, so that then we were in competition, believe it or not, with Honolulu and San Juan, Puerto Rico. So, you know, I thought, ooh, West Virginia, Honolulu. But as it turned out, you know, many people had heard of the Greenbrier, and the members were pretty excited about coming. The governors were, and the staff. So we were finally awarded the go-ahead about a year ago, and so we've been working with the NGA on a regular basis, and here the last month almost constantly with them, you know, to get ready for the big event this coming week.
What do you get out of the NGA meetings? When you go, what are you looking for? What do you hope to come away with?
You know, what we do is, and there's a lot of time during these meetings for just governors only. Hate to say it, but out of the way of the press, we can have a conversation back and forth. We talk a lot about best practices in our state, the things we're trying to do, how we can be more efficient with the taxpayers' dollars, spend them more wisely, and you know, just share ideas of what's going on. It's Democrats and Republicans both in the same room, and so it's not a partisan type atmosphere, but able to share best practices. We talk about a lot of problems we have in common. For example, the Federal Highway Trust Fund, obviously a huge problem for all the states, and You know, Congress continues to do continuing resolutions for 3 months or 5 or 6 months, and it makes it very hard to try to maintain, you know, your roads, to build new interstates or corridors or replace bridges. Some of these projects are, you know, 1, 2, 3 years long to get them complete. So you hate to award a project, and it makes it, in my opinion, more expensive to award a project knowing that the federal funds may run out in 3 months. And obviously, most of these funds are 90-10 match with the state, and we've always had that. But that's a big problem for us now, just operate kind of on a shoestring, and we're really doing a lot of things to encourage Congress to come together. And, you know, I mean, it's their responsibility, just like it's ours, to maintain our infrastructure in our country. So we talk about that a lot. We talk about the National Guard, you know, with the federal cuts. There's a move afoot to cut the amount of the National Guard. We here in West Virginia all are too familiar with what our National Guard does for us when we have floods like we've been having recently, or the derecho. You know, I've got to call up the National Guard to work, the water crisis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had hundreds of members of the Guard out there working. And that's so important for the governor to have in case of emergency, to make sure that people are, you know, taken care of, they're rescued, they get the supplies they need. Mm-hmm. So it's those kind of things that we talk about. We talk about education, health care, and those standard things that we talk about within the state, but we're able to share that time and see what other states are doing.
Just looking at the agenda, some of what you'll be talking about, innovative strategies for tourism and economic development. And we always consider, in terms of economic development and to some extent tourism, that the states are actually competing with one another, trying to entice manufacturers and businesses with tax credits, and who can do it better, West Virginia or some other state. What does the National Governors Association, as you guys get together and talk about tourism and economic development, how do you reach any kind of agreement or something that you can actually talk about without it being so competitive?
Well, I think that tourism is one of those things where are taking a new path. Basically, what we're attempting to do is go with branding West Virginia and then use some of that match money from our local businesses, you know, to let them spring off of what our brand is. And I think it gives us more bang for our buck when we advertise outside the state. Yeah, we talk about a lot of things. I just recall from back in the winter meeting when we took Millie Marshall up, and she was talking about what we're doing in workforce in West Virginia and the kind of individualized trainings and different programs. And I'll never forget that the new governor of Rhode Island said, well, how do we get a Toyota plant in West Virginia? She's, and that made me very proud. She said, do what West Virginia's doing. So, yeah, those are kind of things that kind of ideas that we do share with each other.
One of the other agenda items is opioid addiction problems. This is not only West Virginia's problem. This is every state's problem. What do you expect from that kind of discussion?
I think, you know, when we're talking about the health issues, it is a big concern every place, and you know, especially the Appalachian region, but it's nationwide. And one of the things that, from our experience, and that I'm going to be talking about, you know, when that subject comes up, is, you know, our biggest problem 3-4 years ago was deaths caused by prescription drugs. And so the changes that you know, that we were able here to make in West Virginia, we tightened up the pill mills and you know, are being more strict. We had more reporting through from doctor's offices to our pharmacies to see if the doctor's not over-prescribing or whatever it is. But then from what we're seeing from that is the downside to it. People are getting away from the prescription drugs and moving toward the street drugs of heroin and other street drugs out there. And so, you know, we're once again having to shift our focus somewhat. We've not stopped looking at prescription drugs, but looking at treatment or prevention from street drugs and other cheaper ways to get high.
As the host governor, do you have a special role to play at the NGA meeting?
I will have a special role to play. Basically, you know, to make sure that the governors and sponsors and others at the NGA have a great time and great memories of West Virginia. I've encouraged them for the last year or two at the different meetings to, you know, bring their families to come a few days early, stay a few days late, and, you know, enjoy and get to know West Virginia. We've got some beautiful scenery, fantastic small towns and so forth, and some great people. So we want to highlight that while we have the governors in West Virginia. For many of them, it'll be their first time here, and hopefully we'll make a good impression on them where they can talk about, wow, well, what a hidden secret they have in West Virginia.
Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth.
The four Republican governors eyeing the presidency in 2016 won't be on hand. Scott Walker of Wisconsin, John Kasich of Ohio, Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, and Chris Christie of New Jersey won't be attending. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:54. Some thick fog this morning, becoming sunny today, warm with highs in the 70s and 80s. Clear overnight with early morning fog in the eastern mountains and the western valleys toward morning. Overnight lows in the 50s and 60s. Mostly sunny on Friday with highs in the 70s and 80s.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at WVHTF.org. Support is also provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Employer services at wvdrs.org.
Hubert Rabbit Jones is an improv, jazz, and blues musician who spent three decades performing in Charleston's once-thriving black nightclub scene. Jones will share his stories and memories of his career tonight at the Center of Culture and History at the Capitol Complex. Roxy Todd caught up with Jones to preview this evening's lecture.
The 1930s, 40s, and 50s in Charleston, before the decline in mining jobs caused many African Americans to leave West Virginia, those years were electric, with music that could be heard throughout the city on almost any night of the week. That's what Hubert Jones remembers. He made his living as an accountant, but his love was playing improv jazz or the blues with so many musicians who passed through the capital city. Back then, segregation was still officially law, but in Charleston's nightclubs, blacks and whites would often mingle. Jones played upright bass at many of the nightclubs in town, including many of the white bars, where officially white people were not supposed to dance to music that was being performed by black musicians.
And, of course, sometimes the policeman would stop them and sometimes they wouldn't. And then following the dances and everything, some of the whites wanted to come over to the Triangle District and enjoy the rest of the night, you know, listening to and dancing to black music.
By the Triangle District, Jones is referring to The Block, a neighborhood in downtown Charleston that once flourished with many black-owned businesses. Today, most of what can be found in The Block is a post office and an interstate exit, both of which were built right on top of this once vibrant and ethnically diverse community. This evening, Jones will discuss his role in some of that community's history. His lecture will take place at 6 p.m. in the Culture Center Archives and History Museum in Charleston. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.